This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The return of Ugandan legislator Robert Kyagulanyi, better known as Bobi Wine, has excited his supporters and raised their hopes for political change. The government says the opposition leader's political fame will fizzle.
That's Halima Afmani reporting from Kampala. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, Tanzanian officials say at least 136 people died when a ferry capsized and sank on Lake Victoria. While Ebola is being contained in eastern DRC, outbreaks in North Kivu and Ituri provinces remain active. And in Algeria politics, we'll look at the crisis of the succession of process. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. The return of Ugandan legislator Robert Kyagulanyi, better known as singer Bobi Wine, has excited his supporters and raised their hopes for political change. The government says the opposition leader's political fame will fizzle. Halima Athumani has the latest from Kampala.
Hundreds of young people gathered Thursday at Robert Kyagulanyi's home in the Wakiso district outside of Kampala. Their songs and chants made clear who they want Uganda's next leader to be. Beaten but not broken, the 36-year-old Kyagulanyi told VOA he cannot think about the 2021 presidential election at the current time.
Right now we are actually slaves in our own country. We cannot speak freely. We cannot even wave to each other freely. So if we have such impunity, we must think about that impunity and how to deal with it. It is now or never. It has never happened before that so many people are so united and are speaking with one voice. This should not be taken for granted.
Kyagulanyi returned to Uganda Thursday after staying in the United States to receive medical treatment. He sustained injuries last month when police arrested him following protests against President Yoweri Museveni in the town of Arua. Nakuya Aida was among those chanting her support for Kyagulanyi. She sees this as the start of a movement.
This is the process leading us to 2021. We are hoping change through election. We are spreading the gospel of people power all over the country. So there is nothing like asking what next. We are already in the transitional process without tear gas, without worry, but with the vigor, with all the courage.
Political analyst Anna Adeke-Baju says young people are tired of hearing the older generation praise the current government for bringing peace after years of conflict. She argues that the younger generation has reached its breaking point.
We're talking about young people who can't get jobs. We're talking about systems that we need to build so that they work for all of us. For our sake as young people, I hope that we are preserved until we can finish this revolution that is already in its primary stages. We would never want, of course, our country to be marred by more bloodshed.
Ofwono Opondo, the government spokesperson, says the ruling National Resistance Movement, through its political promises, created expectations.
NRM government is not able to create for them opportunities at a faster pace. And therefore, there is genuine discontent and yearning, particularly opportunity for gainful employment. But that cannot be achieved by the kind of emotional wave of Bobi Wine.
Kyagulanyi and several opposition colleagues are still facing charges of treason in connection with the incident in Arua when someone threw a stone at the president's motorcade, shattering a car window. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Tanzanian officials say at least 136 people died when a ferry capsized and sank on Lake Victoria. It was unclear how many people were aboard, but estimates were put at 300, raising fears that the death toll could reach 200 or more. Dozens of rescue workers were searching for survivors. 37 people were rescued after the boat went down yesterday afternoon, close to the dock at Ukwere, the lake's largest island. It was returning from a busy market day on nearby Ukara Island. Lake Victoria is Africa's largest lake by area and is bordered by Tanzania, Uganda, and Kenya. It has been hit by several major ferry disasters, including in 1996 when the ferry MV Bukova sank, killing more than 800 people. The World Health Organization reports substantial progress is being made in containing the spread of the Ebola virus in eastern DRC. It warns, however, that new hotspots are appearing. The WHO says the number of confirmed and probable cases of Ebola in Congo stands at 143, including 97 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
WHO officials say they are pleased with the progress being made in limiting the spread of the Ebola virus, but that the outbreak of this fatal disease in Congo's conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces remains active and vigilance must be maintained. WHO reports the situation in Mangina, the initial epicenter of the epidemic in North Kivu, is stabilizing. WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib tells VOA there are no security problems there, so health workers are able to safely access the area and treat those affected by the disease.
But immediately to the east is an inaccessible area. This region is in security level 4. Which is one of the highest in the UN security phasing system. For example, the road from Beni to Oicha is in the red zone. So in some places we are really able to move to work. In some other places it's more difficult.
Shaib says the cities of Beni and Butembo have become the new hotspots. She notes Butembo is in the red zone. The WHO spokeswoman says there is significant risk that Ebola could spread there, and health workers have to remain on top of the many challenges facing them. Among the challenges is a growing resistance in some communities to measures used to contain the virus. For example, Shaib says, some people are reluctant to go to treatment centers for care. Others are unwilling to change traditional burial practices, such as touching the bodies of those who have died from Ebola. WHO warns this is one of the surest ways of spreading the infection. The outbreak in the DRC is the 10th since Ebola was first identified in 1976. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika has dismissed nearly a dozen military figures over the past few months. They include 4 regional commanders, the head of military intelligence, and several generals at the defense ministry. Observers say the president may seek re-election next year and has been concentrating power in his inner circle. Gaudet Bagat is a professor of national security at National Defense University in Washington, D.C. He spoke to VOA's senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the next presidential election in Algeria and the crisis of the succession process.
Algeria, like any developing country, has some issues in economic and political reform, and the military is very important institution in Algeria. And I believe there is usually efforts to modernize the military, and there is no any indication that there is a challenge from the military to the political leadership.
Regarding the next presidential elections, would Algeria sustain another term for a president who has been confined to a wheelchair for some years?
Like any country, the health of the president is almost kind of classified or not available to the public. President Bouteflika has been in office for a long time, and occasionally he is seen and his picture is in the media. For sure, there is concern about his health. How bad or how good his health is a matter of speculation. It is unknown. So what I do know that the political establishment more or less agrees that he is a unifying figure. This means even if his health is not good, there is no substitute. There is no one public figure the different factions within the political establishment can agree on.
But prominent Algerian politicians and intellectuals have called on Bouteflika to refrain from running for a fifth term in order to enable Algeria to open a new chapter. Would he positively respond to that call? And if so, how do you envision the succession process in Algeria?
Algeria, like all countries in the Middle East and beyond, there are questions about succession. I mean, you can think about Saudi Arabia, about Egypt, about Kuwait, about many other countries. There is no agreed on rules to handle succession question. As you said, many people in Algeria called on the president to step down or not to run for another term. But Algeria is not different from its neighbors. So will the president of Algeria decide not to seek another term? There is no way to know. Exactly, there is no way to know if Al-Sisi will not seek another term or when, if King Sulaiman of Saudi Arabia will step down. So it is very hard to make any prediction about the fate of leadership in the Arab world. I mean, it is different from the United States. We have election every 4 years. We know more or less what will happen or who will run. In Algeria, like its neighbors, it is very hard to make any prediction.
That's Gaudet Bhagat, professor of national security at the National Defense University in Washington. He was speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawy. Coming up on 17 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, Catholic parishioners gathered for a special service in Kinshasa last month to commemorate pro-democracy activists who died for their cause and others who are in detention. Tensions continue to run high in the DRC ahead of long-delayed elections, now scheduled for December. Chika Adua has more from Kinshasa.
The Catholic Church is a powerful force in the DRC. Nearly half of the country's population are members. They say they're inspired by the church's steady demands for good governance. But ever since the anti-government protests began early last year, government security forces have been targeting certain churchgoers like Gertrude Ekombe. We did not go back to our families, she says. We are living in clandestine since January until today. For our security, we inform the UN mission, MONUSCO, about our movements, and some of their agents go before us whenever we go out. They are even here with us. The demonstrations began after President Joseph Kabila refused to step down at the end of his second term in December 2016. Kabila, who has been in power since 2001, finally announced he would step down in August. He said he is supporting former Interior Minister Emmanuel Shadary in the upcoming polls. But it took a series of demonstrations for Kabila to finally step down. Human Rights Watch says at least 45 people have been killed by government forces in church-organized rallies. Rosie Mukendi, an assistant professor, was among those killed. His sister Muriel said the family was always concerned about his anti-government activism. He was killed like a dog in the middle of a crowd, she says. Rosie had an early commitment and he was very young when he was interested in politics. As his relatives, we didn't agree with his militancy. We found it always dangerous because we are in Africa and we deal more with autocrats than democrats. The government says it is still investigating Rossi's death. Lambert Mende, the federal minister of communication, said he thinks the Catholic Church leadership is overstepping its boundaries.
So let them remove their status of bishops and become politicians. And we run together and we shall see who will win elections. We are talking of, you know, leading a country. It is not the bishops to lead a country.
Mende also blames Western governments for interfering in local politics and inciting protest. He said some of the local Catholic bishops are being sponsored by Western governments. The bishops support a lay committee known as the CLC to coordinate the church's activism. Felix Kabange speaks for the CLC. The CLC is fighting to safeguard freedom of expression, especially in this pre-electoral context, Kabange says. Our members can't move freely, and at any time they can be arrested. This is a sacrifice for the sake of public interest. Parishioners say as long as the church leadership continues to back them, they'll continue to nonviolently demand greater democracy in the DRC. Chika Odua for VOA News, Kinshasa.
5 years ago, Somali militant group Al-Shabaab attacked a major shopping mall in Nairobi, killing more than 60 people. A new report says the group remains a threat to Kenya, but notes the government has learned to work with the Muslim community, helping to reduce the likelihood of successful attacks. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA.
On September 21, 2013, four armed men from the Al-Shabaab militant group stormed the Westgate shopping mall in Nairobi, shooting people on sight and taking control of the mall with hundreds trapped. When the four-day siege ended, 67 people were dead and more than 150 wounded. Al-Shabaab said it was retaliating for the Kenyan government sending forces into Somalia 2 years earlier. 31-year-old John Wangombe worked at the Westgate. He was one of the hundreds of people at the mall when the attack happened.
I used to work at Westgate, control room. So I used to monitor the cameras and their networks at the Westgate Mall. So on that specific day, I was on duty. So we were doing all the monitoring. And then all of a sudden, we started hearing gunshots. So what came first to my mind was to run away.
The IT expert was familiar with the mall and hid in the store with a dozen others. He told viewers he could hear gunshots and people screaming. Police rescued him 3 hours later. The father of one went back to Westgate one time after it reopened in 2015 and never returned after that.
Right now they have so many security guys. It's like you fear going there because you think they might attack again. And the security, they put you off. Because they have a lot of checkups, the gates are opening and closing, they have a lot of sensors all over. You get scared even going around there when you see all the security guys there.
Al-Shabaab attacked a college in the town of Garissa, killing nearly 150 people, most of them students. The International Crisis Group warned in a new report Friday that Al-Shabaab is still a threat to Kenya and the region. The report said a government crackdown that followed the Westgate attack fueled anger within the Muslim community and that has helped Al-Shabaab to recruit more in Kenya. But Muridi Mutiga, the Crisis Group's Kenya researcher, says the government has learned to work with the community.
Since 2015, given the step change, particularly enhanced engagement with communities, appointment of some leaders from local communities, engagement with elected officials at the local level, and generally a more convivial relationship with the community has yielded better intelligence and in turn has resulted in a lower level of attacks.
Kenyan forces are still part of the African Union mission that provides security to the Somali government and its population. Al-Shabaab continues to demand that Kenyan troops leave Somalia and carries out frequent attacks along the borders and the coastal town of Lamu. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Zimbabwe has weathered an economic downturn for the last 15 years, a period that has included the crash of the Zimbabwe dollar. Its collapse several years ago led to its suspension and subsequent adoption of a multi-currency regime, including the U.S. dollar, euro, and South African rand as official currencies. With the elections now done and a newly minted finance minister in place, the country is anxious to see whether President Emmerson Mnangagwa's new government will turn around the ailing but resource-rich nation's fortunes. VOA correspondent Addie Gondo gives us more on the issue.
The newly appointed finance minister, Mthuli Ncube, is also a former vice president of Africa Development Bank and a professor of financial mathematics. He recently indicated his intention to remove the current currency, which is made up of bond notes, and reintroduce the Zimbabwean dollar. Economic analysts are expressing domestic business confidence and are anxious to mitigate the long-standing liquidity crunch in the economy. Dr. Gift Mgano is a leading economist and critic of the former government's economic policies.
You need fiscal consolidation, where the national budget has aligned itself to a point where the budget, only 30% of the budget goes to salaries. What we should do in the early 1990s, and 70% then is available to be accommodated for other expenditures, and 30% is for salary. Today, over 105% of our budget is going to salaries. And we need to have, again, a situation where 30% of our budget goes for capital expenditure, roads, infrastructure, things like that. So what is the Minister of Finance talking about? It's a roadmap of international $1. It's not an immediate thing which is focusing on.
Tulingwe says he has measures in place to turn around the country's economy. Some observers insist that the introduction of the Zimbabwean dollar is a mere technicality, as the bond note is already in circulation. Banker and economist Lawrence Katsoka is among those who feel the Zimbabwean government's intended goal of introducing the Zim dollar is a waste of time.
Introducing it is going to bring bad memories. The time is just not ripe. If they have to bring it, we need to have the fundamentals right. The industries should be able to support the currency. So we should have at least some reserves to sustain the local currency.
The government's argument for the introduction of the much-criticized bond notes was the need to curb capital flight and money laundering. The notes are, however, a surrogate form of currency which cannot be exchanged with other regional currencies.
If you look at our sources of capital flight, how we are losing money, according to World Bank, 82% of our money leaves this country through imports, but we're importing. So out of over 60 billion or so, which is going out, 82% is going out through imports. We're importing raw materials and things like the fuel, motor vehicles. Then 14%, this money is leaving this country through capital remittances, where we are sending money back to investors through dividends payments. Then only 2%, the remaining out of 100%, is through illicit financial fraud, what Mangujiga was trying to stop by bond note. So how do you, as a central bank, spend energy and time to put a policy measure to stop 2% of the illicit money transfer, right? Yet you see 82% of capital flight is coming outside trade because we're importing more. And out of that 82%, it's 82% of $6 billion, isn't it? $2 billion of that $6 billion, these are agricultural related products which we can produce locally. So one of the things the central bank was supposed to think about bond note, they were supposed to put a facility to support production.
Economists warn that any reform program that is not focused on fundamentals, with particular focus on the fiscal policy, will be useless. In 2017, government's domestic debt rose by 70.45% to $6.27 billion, while credit to the private sector stood at $3.71 billion. The increase in credit to government reflects its increased reliance on the banking sector to finance its budget deficit. Despite promising fiscal rationalization earlier this year, government recently gave civil servants an increment. Observers say government needs to be serious about implementing measures that bring about real change. Reporting for VOA, I'm Adi Gondo.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.